The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, and Chicago. And if you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Good afternoon and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists, and now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Leeds.
Hello, welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Leeds, along with Tim McKenna. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Diane.
You don't have a shout-out this week, do you?
No shout-outs. I'm really happy about that.
Nobody got knocked off a bike that you know?
Not that I know. I didn't answer my phone all week.
So if somebody did, you didn't want to hear about it.
I didn't want to hear it.
Got it. I do have a shout-out, though. It's a good one. A local cyclist and Kent State University grad student by the name of Sarah Harper is once again participating in Race Across America as it kicks off from Oceanside, California today, heading for Annapolis, Maryland. Harper will be competing as an alternate to a four-person team of women who have never competed in the race, making her the team's veteran. The racers rotate shifts of cycling, averaging 6 hours a day for a total of 7 to 9 days. Harper said, and I quote, "I started riding when I was 15, and I bought a road bike instead of a car when I turned 16. I've been riding since, and it has been a big influence in my life." So Harper's Race Across America team is called Team Phenomenal Hope, and the PH in Phenomenal is capitalized. It cycles to benefit the Pulmonary Hypertension Association. Pulmonary hypertension is something that Harper is familiar with, as she has severe asthma herself. So we'll be keeping tabs on Ram and on Sarah, and good luck to Team Phenomenal Hope and all of the other participants.
Yep, I've been watching some of the solo riders that have started out on Tuesday already.
Right.
Which it's been a little bit crazy, and the coverage is great. I love their GPS system where you can follow the riders exactly where they're at. And we've already had a couple incidents where riders have gone down, which they just happened to be following them. But they're up and going, so.
Good.
Anybody that does that is crazy anyway, so.
Is that your definition? Riding across America is
really close. 3,000 miles and trying to do it in 7 days? Yeah. Or yes.
I don't even want to do it in a car in 7 days.
I don't want to do it in an airplane.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, we do have a great show. I want to get to it. This evening, we talk with pro racer Phil Guymon. After a long and very winding road that started out with a fat, out-of-shape adolescent, Phil has signed with Pro Team Garmin Sharp here in early 2014. His evolution into a smart elite racer is chronicled in his new book, Pro Cycling on $10 a Day, From a Fat Kid to Euro Pro, just out from Velo Press. He never takes himself too seriously, but the book is filled with pithy stories, although it does have some serious undertones. It's refreshing to read his short stories and often snide comments about what it's like to come up in the ranks of American cycling, from road rash, indigestion, overflowing toilets, and more. So we're going to speak with Phil in the second half of the show. We will check in with Jen Anders. Jen is the project manager for the 10th annual Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah. She's going to fill us in on this year's event. This year, we will see 16 teams compete over 7 days, covering 753.8 miles and ready, 57,863 feet of vertical gain. The Tour of Utah is easily America's toughest stage race, and coming up on the heels of the Tour de France, it should offer some great pro racing in this country. Finally, we'll speak with Pat Blackman, whose company, Senior Cycling, designs bicycle tours specifically for active seniors. The demographic is anyone over the age of 50. That would be me.
I fit there.
So. Yeah, we fit. The senior cycling tours do offer a physical challenge, but with plenty of time to see the sights along the way. Pat focuses on the nitty-gritty logistics, including luggage transport, lodging, and cue sheets, and allows you to choose luxuries you want in food, drink, and sightseeing. And she'll be with me right after we talk with Jen Anders. Tim and I have a few interesting news items. Let's get right to it and head on out to Salt Lake City, Utah, and talk with Tour of Utah project manager Jen Anders. Hi, Jen. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Oh, no problem. We're happy to be here.
Yes, and this is a second year. You are the project manager for the Tour of Utah. It's hard to believe another year has gone by. Tell us a little bit about the tour. It is becoming a rival to even the most grueling European tours, so it's pretty exciting. Why don't you give us the stats, when it is, how long it is this year, how many stages, climbs, that kind of thing, just the basic stuff.
Absolutely. Well, the Tour of Utah comes back for its 10th year. So we are the first stage race to be actually celebrating our 10th year of riding throughout the state of Utah. It comes back to Utah every year, the first week of August. So this year we will be racing from August 4th through August the 10th, starting down in the Cedar City area, so in southern Utah, in the wonderful Red Rock area, and finishing in Park City, Utah on Sunday, August 10th, through the really wooded areas and the steep climbs that the Wasatch Mountains have to offer.
One of the prettiest cities I've ever been in. Park City.
Oh, it's
beautiful. It's awesome, but it's very high up.
Yes, it's very high. One of the great things that we are experiencing this year is that the tour is adding an additional day. So we were lucky enough last September at the UCI Road Commission meeting, they granted us a seventh day of racing, which is really unprecedented. So we are excited to have a seventh day. This year, because we've added that seventh day, we have added significantly in mileage and in elevation climbed. We are now, as we've always touted, America's toughest stage race, but we will race 753 miles this year.
Wow.
Which is stunning. Also, the vertical gain that we will have is over 57,000 feet. We are introducing a new mountaintop finish at Powder Mountain, which is in the Eden Valley, just outside of Ogden, Utah. It will be a stunning stage. However, the climbs are significant. The riders are forced to look basically straight up the mountain. This hill that they will climb will range anywhere from a 6 to 10 degree slope that they are shooting straight up, and they will look at it the whole time. There's no switchbacks or anything. It's very daunting, and we really think that that will separate the men from the boys on that climb from stage 4. We will have the most King of the Mountain climbs that we've ever had, with 17, which is pretty significant. We also have the highest number of sprints as well, with 14 sprint lines that we will cross. And we estimate that probably 4 of the 7 stages will actually be a sprint finish.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about the participation, and then I want to talk about something you do that I think is very different from other stage races. Tell me how many teams will be participating this year, and what riders, some of the riders you are expecting. It is after the Tour de France, so I'm not sure what kind of expectations you have for ridership.
Yes, our race is 7 days after the Tour de France concludes. We will have 16 teams, including 6 of the top pro world teams that will be coming over immediately from France, including Trek Factory, Team Garmin Sharp, Belkin, Lamprey, BMC, and Cannondale are the top 6 riders. We're expecting that Tom Danielson comes back to defend his title that he won last year. We are hoping, with our fingers crossed, that Chris Horner has recovered enough from his crash in Italy earlier this spring to ride for Team Lamprey.
I actually have a news piece this week that says he's about ready.
I know, which is fantastic. It's huge. We are Smart Stop Mountain Khaki is one of the continental teams that has been invited to come, and they will be bringing the national USA national champion in the road race. He will be riding with us. Freddie Rodriguez from Jelly Belly will be joining us as well, and a whole host of other great names. We're really excited. We are still negotiating, obviously, with the teams on their rosters, and we will know that probably the week of July 21st is when we'll have the final rosters, but we're really expecting a great lineup of riders to come out this year.
I'm speaking with Jen Anders. She is the project manager for the 10th annual Tour of Utah. Is the tour going to be televised?
Yes, absolutely. We are live every day from 2 to 4 on Fox Sports.
Okay.
So it will be live on your Fox Sport affiliate. Sometimes it will be en route, and it really depends on who your TV provider or cable provider is. However, if you don't have cable and you still want to watch the Tour of Utah, we stream the event start to finish live via our Tour Tracker application. So you can download it onto your mobile app. You can watch it via our website and stream the entire race from start to finish.
Excellent. So once again, the dates of the tour are?
The dates of the tour are August 4th through the 11th.
And this is the 10th annual Tour of Utah, Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah. Jen, thank you so much for talking to me about the event. I was excited last year about it, and I didn't have a lot of time to watch it. This year, I'm hoping I can watch every stage.
Well, thank you very much. We're really looking forward to an exciting race in August.
Good luck with it, and thanks for doing a great job. I appreciate it.
No problem.
All
right. Thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Jen Anders joined me from her office in Salt Lake City. She is with the Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah, the country's toughest stage race. What do you think?
It certainly sounds like it, and breathing would absolutely be a good thing.
When I was in Park City, I really did have trouble with the elevation. It's about 6,700 feet, and I don't know how these guys can go all out on these bikes at 11,000 feet and sprint to a finish, really? It's going to be an interesting tour, and we'll see if Tom Danielson can repeat his win from last year. Of course, Taylor Finney won't be there, unfortunately, because he's mending a broken leg. So we are going to hustle right along, and we're going to head on down to Virginia and speak with the owner of Senior Cycling Tours, Pat Blackman. Pat, thanks for joining me on the show this evening.
Well, thank you for having me, Diane.
So I came across your company, and I don't even remember how, Senior Cycling, and could instantly relate. Tell us a bit about the company and your background and how you got involved in this part of our wonderful sport.
Well, about 15 years ago, I was on a cross-country bicycle ride. And I was 60 then and thinking about doing a new semi-retirement project. And loved the ride, and I worked with seniors, and I thought it would be a good idea to do it with seniors.
It's an outstanding idea. Outstanding idea. Whose cross-country ride did you take?
It was a group called Women's Tours, and it was about 15 years ago, and it was a fundraiser for breast cancer awareness for women over 50. And everybody on the trip was over 50. There were about 17 of us. And that, I guess, is what encouraged me to really want to do this with seniors rather than just the general population.
Well, it's interesting because I have a lot of friends who take women tours. We've had Jackie Marchand on the show, and I'm very aware of her work, and I really respect what they do. So this is really exciting what you do, too. Define, for the purpose of our listeners' enlightenment, what you consider, who you consider your target client.
Well, if you want my personal opinion of what a senior is, it's somebody 15 years older than I am.
True that.
But I'm not going to get a lot of 90-year-old riders to triple at a company. So I go by AARP's 50 and over designation is what I use.
Do you get mostly couples, or do you get both singles and couples?
It's completely mixed, and every trip is different. But generally, it's a mixture of couples and singles on every trip.
How many people will you take on any one specific tour?
I can take 13 is my max. I have a
15-passenger
van. It is a good number, so it keeps the crowd low and we can socialize.
Are all of your trips domestic?
Yes, on the East Coast.
even nicer, because a lot of people do, you know, California and Utah and, yeah, and Bryce and Colorado. And wow, that's cool. That's really cool. What are your average distances each day?
We average anywhere from 25 to 44 miles a day. My smallest, lowest mileage trip is the one in the Keys, and that's 25 miles a day. But all our others, we go from 32 to 44.
One of the things I noticed when I was reading over your website is that a lot of your tours are already sold out.
Yes. We've been very fortunate. We have a lot of repeat customers. And that is why, literally, you do need to make a reservation at least 9 months in advance, if not more. It sounds funny, but this year I had so many tours sold out, and I started feeling bad about it because I have repeat customers that called and said, oh, I wanted to do this, and it's already booked. And I honestly felt bad.
Well, yeah, you can feel bad, but you know what? Yeah. That just tells them you need to do it sooner.
That's right.
What is the most popular tour you offer? Do you have, like, maybe two or three of the most popular?
I think the Keys have got to be the number one tour I offer. And the second is probably the one I do outside of Montreal in the Laurentian Mountains. It's called the Petit Train des Nord. And it's a wonderful rail trail all through the Laurentians. And that's probably the second most popular.
Are most of your tours trails?
Probably 80% of them are probably trails. We do one of my favorites, which is around the Lake Champlain area on the islands in New York and Vermont, and that's all roads. And some are a little mixture of both, but I would think 80% are probably rail trails.
Explain how your tours work. They are not what you think of, perhaps, if you were looking at a company like Backroads, where they, you know, they greet you and they take your luggage and they do all your meals and all that. You do it a little bit differently, and I kind of like what you do. Explain how you do that.
Well, we do pick up people either at an airport unless they are driving somewhere, because most of our tours, where we start is where we'll return people to. So if people are in driving distance, a lot of people will drive and leave their cars. But people that are flying will pick them up at the airport and generally take them back to the same airport. So we pick up people, and every day we do ride. It's a leisurely ride. Even though we do 44 miles, it's leisure. We ride a little bit in the morning, take a break. We have a very nice lunch. I have a van driver chef who does incredible food. I swear people are coming half the time for the food rather than the bike ride. And then in the evening, we always have a nice cocktail hour, and we can talk about the day and what we did. And we stay at hotels and motels and all. We don't do any camping or anything like that. So it's a leisurely thing, and it's a pleasant thing, and it's a lot of get together with people and who enjoy the same thing.
It's really interesting that you have sort of aimed at this market. Do you rent bikes, or do people bring their own bikes?
A little of both. Again, if they're driving, they usually prefer to have their own bikes.
Sure.
If they're flying, generally we rent. I do have rental bikes, yeah.
Do you have a favorite tour of them? And if you say the Keys, I'm just going to want to jump right on that tour because I love the Keys.
It is the Keys.
It is.
I think because I'm coming down from the north, the beautiful weather in the winter, surrounded by water. I mean, what's not to like?
So how do you do your Keys tour? Where do you start?
Well, we pick up people at the Fort Lauderdale Airport. And we van to Homestead.
Oh, okay.
And we spend the night in Hampstead, meet everybody. They learn all about the tour and what we're going to do. And the next morning, we van to John Pennycamp State Park. And we take a glass bottom boat ride to see the reefs and to go through the mangroves and kind of say to everybody, you're in the Keys, relax. And we bike right from their parking lot straight to Key West. And we do it in 4 days, so it's 25 miles a day, you know, very leisurely and relaxed.
And you go across the 7 Mile Bridge?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Do you ever go to the 7 Mile Grill at the end?
No, we haven't.
Oh,
but
it's
good. I know it is. It just isn't timed right from when we're there.
Yeah, it's just it's one of my favorites.
We just go to No Name Pub.
Oh, cool. Okay. It's been a long time since I was there, but I just it's so nice. It's like being in another country and yet still
really
being
is.
At home.
It really is, and Key West itself is so unique that, you know, we do keep our bikes ride all around Key West, but it's not a specific, you know, tour day for us.
Right. So do you have any new tours coming online for 2015?
Not for 2015. We just added a new tour this year, which is in Ohio, which is we go from Cleveland to Cincinnati via almost all rail trails.
Wait a minute. I'm in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I'm from Cincinnati. So what do you do? You pick up the towpath?
We pick up the towpath outside of Cleveland, where the Ohio Erie Canal.
Right.
We leave there, then we go to the Holmes County Trail, the Robert Pass Trail. I have that whole list in front of me. But we go from trail to trail to trail. The Holmes County is very unique because it's paved trails, and it's shared with a buggy. So it's biking and buggies because you're in Amish country.
Right. Holmes County
right on
is
the same
Amish
trail.
Country.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's all. And so it's very unique, and it's kind of unusual to be biking along and have the buggies going by. And then we hit a whole bunch of trails kind of north of Cincinnati out of Xenia. The Little Miami Trail, the right. Great River Miami Trail, and all those trails. So it's 8 days of really getting a look at Ohio.
Well, you know, a lot of people think Ohio is boring, but it's not.
The people, we did the first trip about 3 weeks ago or so, and everybody loved it and said it's going to be a favorite. We want to do it again. And we have another one coming up in about 10 days, and that's totally sold out. People are looking forward to it.
This has just been fascinating, and we get to end on a note with Ohio. How cool is that? I really like that. Well, you know what? I don't even need to wish you a lot of luck. You're doing a great thing, and there's actually a really interesting article in the AARP Bulletin this month about trails.
Uh-huh.
It, just in case you haven't seen it, it's called Trail Pedal Pushers Also Hit the Street. And it talks about the Ohio-Miami Valley bike paths. That's
what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I hope you have a great winter. I noticed you do take some time off for yourself.
I do. I take a little here and there. I got a month here and there.
I think that's great. And I hope you have a great riding season. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you for having me, Diane.
All righty. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye now.
Pat Blackman joined me from right outside of Nashville in Henderson, Tennessee. Okay, I want to do the Key West tour.
Well, I thought you were going to say you were going to want to do the Ohio tour.
Why? I've already done a lot of the trails down in that she was talking about. That, you know, they all spring out from that Springfield, Xenia, Yellow Springs area.
Yep.
Yeah, because I used to go down there for a yoga conference every year. And Brian would come and do his century on his fixie because it's flat as a pancake down there.
Right. Well, I'm sure you'd miss the Ohio one because that actually starts June 24th.
She said it sold out anyway.
Yep. So the great thing about Florida Keys is that the first one starts, I think it's February 15th.
Oh.
I know exactly how the weather's going to be here in Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, if this year was any indication. All right. Well, we're going to head on over to the news desk.
Yep.
What you got?
We're going to start with something quick and simple, and this is from Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is actually something Brian and I had talked about last week. We were talking about bicycles going into intersections, and when they stop at the red light, the bicycle, it's not getting picked up by the sensor that's in the roadway.
Right.
So what they're doing with 12 separate intersections in Knoxville is they're putting a logo right on top of the sensor, and they've also adjusted the sensors. So cyclists will stop at that specific spot, and they will get picked up much more quickly.
Unless they're riding carbon fiber?
But hopefully there's enough something in there. Yeah,
right.
We talked about
that's pretty cool.
I think this is a great case where the city's actually trying to do something to make it easier for cyclists and also make the intersections a little bit safer if they have to sit there all day and not let it change.
You know, we just talked with Jen Anderson. She said that the U.S. national champion was going to be there. And we had hoped that that was going to be Taylor Finney. And I did mention Taylor a little earlier, I think. But Taylor is actually recovering quite well. There's an excellent article in Velo News this week talking about Taylor and his road to recovery. It's especially interesting to note that the cause of the accident was a race motorcycle that slowed down instead of speeding up as Taylor came around a turn and was going downhill. He had hoped that that win would culminate in his double national victory, first time for a male Rodan time trial. He did become our U.S. national time trial champion. I'll tell you what, though, he's got such a good attitude. I think that genetic quality comes from his mom and dad,
yeah.
Davis and Connie. I mean, because they're just the nicest people on the planet. Anyway, if you want to see this article, it's really well written. It's long. And Taylor Finney's coming back, and big time. Matthew Bowden from the June 10th issue of Velo News. You want to read what's going on with Taylor and his rehab.
Also, it's good to follow him on Twitter. He does post a lot of stuff.
Oh, does he?
And I did see on Thursday he posted that it was actually his second day on what he called the bike. It was a stationary bike, which is amazing considering the incident that he had.
I guess he's like spending 6 to 8 hours a day flexing that knee.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
A little crazy.
Okay, what you got?
Okay, the next is from KLEWTV.com. Lost and stolen bikes will be given away if their owners don't claim them. This is Clarkston, Washington. They've got over 50 bikes sitting in a storage unit. So if you lost or had a bike stolen and you're near Clarkston, Washington, they're going to give them away if you don't go claim it. They typically, the police
department... They don't register bikes up there.
Well, they have some that are registered, some aren't. But they typically will donate a portion of those to the Boys and Girls Clubs, and a local bike shop will go ahead and fix them up and make sure that they're all good. But the rest of them, they will just go ahead and put them up to give them away. So
cool.
Always check in.
Okay. You had a video this week.
I have two videos.
I have one. I don't know if you saw this one. Bike robbery caught on camera?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay. So this was from June 4th. Malcolm Fox was out riding in Somerset West on Saturday and found himself face-to-face with a gun in the last few kilometers of his ride. The three gunmen took his cell phone, car keys, sunglasses, and bike. But they left him wearing his helmet with his GoPro attached, filming the entire incident. This is the when stupid thieves should know better department.
Right.
Thanks to this footage and superb work by the police, the good news is that all three suspects have been arrested and Malcolm has received his cell phone and bike back already. We commend him for remaining calm throughout the encounter, and they're saying we urge you to remain vigilant at all times on your rides. Be careful out there. And the video and this little short article is from bicycling.co.za. And all you have to do is type in bike robbery caught camera. Very interesting. It's short. It's exactly 60 seconds. These guys were really wily coyotes. They were,
in and out and quick, and they got
scary.
Exactly what they needed to,
and
that was it.
And then they got arrested. Ha ha. Okay, go ahead.
Quick note on a bicycle recall. Scott USA of Ketchum, Idaho, recalling 2,000 bicycles that are 2014 Scott Speedster 30 and 40s, Contessa Speedster 25 and 35 road bicycles. This steerer tube in the front fork can break, posing a fall hazard.
What is with this front fork problem? I mean, can't they figure out how to put a steerer tube on a pair of fork blades?
Well, jeez. I would think so. If you're going to pay $1,000 to $1,300 for a bike that's manufactured in Cambodia, you would hope that it works out okay. So if you have a bike that's anywhere in that range, make sure and contact Scott. They'll get you hooked up so they can get that replaced for you at no charge. And I find a lot of these recalls at consumeraffairs.com.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They do a really nice job of posting a lot of other stuff, but that's where I find a lot of the recalls.
So you remember I was talking to Jen Anders and we were talking about Chris Horner returning.
Yes.
And I said I had a news item. This is from Velo News. Horner to return to racing June 19th in Slovenia, then assist for the Tour de France. American Chris Horner will make his return to racing later this month at the Tour of Slovenia and may even start the Tour de France, depending on his condition. His Lampre Merida team announced today in a press release. Horner, 42, was struck by a car on April 11th while training near Lake Como, Italy, and suffered four broken ribs and a punctured lung, though it could have been much worse. About three cars passed him, and the final one clipped him and left him, Lampre team manager Brent Copeland told Velo News after the crash. He had to get up and get out of the tunnel because he was in a dangerous place, and his telephone had no reception for him to call for safety. The crash derailed the 2013 Vuelta a España champion's Giro campaign and cast the rest of his season in doubt. It had been a rough start with his new team after landing a late contract with Lampre. And before the crash, he suffered from tendonitis and illness and abandoned Torino Adriatico and the Volta a Catalunya. I hope he's back. I hope he's doing well. He's like an old man in our racing business, but you know what? The older you get, the better your endurance gets a lot
the
of
more
times.
Experienced
and
you
the
are.
More
Let's not use that word old. Let's keep that out
the
of
the more experienced
yes.
you are, yes.
The more experienced.
It's only a number.
Yep.
Okay.
That's all.
Tell me about your video.
There's two videos that I found, but let's go with this one. If you just do a quick YouTube search for Jackie Crowell, Race for Life. It was a little speech that she gave at the Tour of California. She was a competitor there
last year. This is a tearjerker, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So go ahead, go watch it, and then let me know what you think.
My last news item this week is actually about a piece I read in Red Kite Prayer. You know, I love great writing.
Yep.
And Patrick Brady is an excellent writer. And he penned an article titled Snake Oil.
Okay.
The article is really about the engineering good guys in our industry and how by the time you walk into a bike shop, the product you get is vetted and safe. All in all, it's an excellent piece. It's got a lot of logical and compelling ideas. And as I said, I love great writing. I highly recommend, rather than tell you a lot about it, that if you're interested, read it. And then, if you're interested, comment. There were already, and it had just been published, 24 comments when I read it. And I promised him I would reread it when I had more time and make my comments, which I have not done yet, but I will. You got one more?
Last thing, just an update on people. The Race Across America started for the solo riders on Tuesday. The teams start today. The best place that I found to follow is ridefarther.com. There are apps for your iPhone or for your Android. They have live RAM race tracking, which tracks through GPS systems. They have daily updates with video and everything else. It's a great, great use of everything that is social and internet-based, and it's a great way to keep track of it. And don't get stuck at 3 in the morning, you know, trying to follow the little dots.
Okay, then. All right, we got to take a break. After we get back, we are going to talk with pro racer Phil Guymon. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees. This evening, we talk with pro racer Phil Guymon. After a long and very winding road that started out with a fat, out-of-shape adolescent, Phil has signed with pro team Garmin Sharp here in early 2014. His evolution into a smart elite racer is chronicled in his new book, Pro Cycling on $10 a Day, From a Fat Kid to Euro Pro, just out from Velo Press. Hi, Phil. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Wow. I don't know where to begin. Given the subtitle of your book, From Fat Kid to Euro Pro, I think we should begin there at the fat part.
Okay.
Tell me about where you grew up, whether you really were fat, and how a bicycle changed you, evidently, forever.
Well, hopefully forever. That remains to be seen. The day is young. I could get fat again any minute now. Yeah, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. Not a whole lot of bike riding there. Not much, you know, active, you know, healthy fitness community. I'm sure it's there, but not in my high school anyway. In Atlanta, you're kind of raised on Coca-Cola. And
oh, that's right.
So I played a couple sports and then, you know, put on a few pounds and then stopped really. Like, as a kid, I played soccer, you know, running around on the field with a bunch of other kids. Kind of stopped that when I was 12 or so, and didn't exercise or do anything active for a while. And I sort of reached this point at 17. I remember the doctor, I just had my annual checkup, and I was exactly over the line for obese. So I wasn't enormous, but I was in a bad direction. It was kind of a moment where it was either I'm going to keep going or I'm going to reverse this somehow. And I was young enough that it wasn't did much to me, but I was 36, 38 inch waist. Maybe when I was 5'8" or something. And I was a kid, there was no, I wasn't really even grown up yet. And I was pudgy.
So you went from that and suddenly you got on a bike and then something really changed.
Yeah. I started riding, junior of high school. I kind of just started riding the bike around a lot. I had a mountain bike and I put slick tires on it. And just rode around town. And then over the summer I did one of those, it's not really a charity thing. It's just like you sign up for a week and you ride your bike from one place to another, and you kind of camp along the way, and there's little rest stops and stuff like that. So it's like a 5 or 6 day Gran Fondo thing that I did with a couple of friends. And I started my senior year. I think I'd lost a whole lot of weight. And I was kind of a different person. And then that sort of continued by the time I went to college. And when I got there, you know, a lot of life things change when you start college, I guess. You know, suddenly you're responsible for yourself. But my grades improved, my attitude improved, it was easier to make friends. It was just, you know, I had a girlfriend finally. Just like a lot of different things in life sort of fell together, and like riding a bike was sort of the first step as the dominoes fell, and I became from like kind of a creepy pain in the ass teenager to a decent human being.
You know, that's very interesting, because I'll bet a lot of people would look at bike riders and not see that progression. In fact, I think they would see just the opposite. You know, knowing how cyclists, young cyclists who are trying to move up in the ranks and do all the things that they do, sort of drop out of that kind of social scene. Why don't you tell us how a young rider goes from just a college student riding his bike around, doing a little bit of, you know, long distance stuff, and then something happened, you started actually really racing your bike.
Yeah, well, when I went to college, I was still on a specialized stump jumper mountain bike with slick tires that I just kind of rode around and explored the neighborhood. I went to school in Florida, where riding is a lot better there than Atlanta. So I was really enjoying like kind of seeing the countryside by bike. And I ran into like the collegiate cycling club there. It's not even really a team, it's a club. So you have to pay your own entry fees, and you know, you don't get matching bikes. You got to buy the kits and stuff like that. But sort of through there, I met, that was the first place I made friends in college was the cycling club. And I'm still close with a whole lot of those people, from University of Florida's club there. And from there, so I started riding with them just for company. I got a road bike that fall, and then they put on, you know, collegiate training races, January, February in Gainesville, Florida. And I went to my first few races as like a Cat 5 and a Cat 4, and kind of just from riding so much with the club, I was in good shape, and I won the first couple of races I did, and then they put me in like the collegiate A category, which I had no business in. I was strong enough, but I hadn't even really raced a bike, so I crashed a good bit, but I was competing with guys like Brent Bookwalter was, I think, a junior or senior at the time, racing for Lise McRae, and here I am, like, you know, he was on track to World Tour. He was a pro then for a few years, but I was sort of racing all those guys and thrown to that deep end, and I just kept it going through college, and when I finished college, signed for a year for Jelly Belly.
Wow!
Yeah. So pretty much every year I'd be in school fall and spring, and then in the summer I'd get to Florida and basically like find some base farther north. It was in Pennsylvania or Massachusetts 1 year, depending on what team I was on. We'd go up there, and then I would just base out there and drive to races and race the track in Pennsylvania a lot and do the local race team there.
Was that
Kutztown? Yep.
Okay,
because I did 3 summers there.
Yeah, there's a funny story I want you to tell from there. I'm speaking with Phil Guymon. He is a Garmin Sharp Pro rider, yes?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is
Today
that?
I am.
And so,
it's pretty nice.
That is so cool. Just to hear you say that is pretty cool, because I've read the book, and I'm telling you, you know, what you did is, if people knew what it took to do what you've done, I'll bet a lot more people wouldn't even, if they read your book, they may just turn around and go play basketball or something. I don't know.
You know, and that might be good for a lot of people. That's sort of something that I thought might happen. Like, I want people to know what they're getting into. That was sort of my thought, was when they start racing.
Right.
I want them to know, like, this, maybe it'll be easier for you, but this is what it took for an average dude.
And I think you were average, you know, given what you said. So I want you to tell this story, because it's so, I laughed, because the Tour de France is coming up in a few weeks, and you were living in Kutztown with your teammates. It was during, and it was going to be July, and I want you to take us through the story of the cable TV.
Sure. So we're living in Kutztown. This was the second year that I actually, the third year that I lived in Kutztown. I lived there 4 years or 4 summers. So this year we were writing for Seconet was the name of the team. It was a software company out of New York City. But a lot of us raced the track in Kutztown. So they just got us, it was two apartments on Main Street, Kutztown, right on top of each other. So there were separate apartments, but they were linked by a set of stairs. And we pretty much all just crammed into the same rooms. And I think there were eight of us for two bedrooms or something like that. Just air mattresses and squalor everywhere. It was great. But one of the touchier moments of the summer was we wanted to watch the Tour de France, and I don't know where they got a TV. Somebody found a TV, or I dare say they might have bought it at Walmart with the intent to return it at the end of the summer. I never did such horrible behavior, but a couple of the guys might have gone for that. Or maybe they found it on the street. But we did have a TV and some kind of table to put it on. It could have been a cardboard box. But someone decided to sign up for cable to watch the Tour de France that summer, which makes sense. We're all bike racers. We want to watch the tour. And there was a bar across the street that we tried to watch it at, and they didn't get whatever channel. So we had to get our own deal, and they masked it out, and it was going to be like $6 a person or something like that to have internet, or to actually we had internet to have the cable, added to it. And so we all like, oh, $6, no big deal. But one guy, his name was Guy East, was like, no, I don't want it. I don't want to pay. Because he had just gotten a couple books, and I think like a lot of us were college graduates, and Guy was kind of feeling like, maybe I should read more. And we're all kids. He was a dumb kid. We were a bunch of dumb kids. And this is what happens when you put a bunch of dumb kids together. His guy says, oh, I don't want it. And the rest was like, all right, well, fine, then we'll get it. We'll split it seven ways, and we'll pay $8 a piece. But, Guy, you can't watch it. You understand? Like, you can't walk in the room when we've got it on there. And he's like, I can't promise that. This is a free house, and if the Tour de France is on, I'm going to go watch it. And we were like, fine, screw you. We're not going to have it. So out of spite, none of us watched the tour that summer. It was sort of like a combination of $6 and some kind of like vague moral issue that we had. It was all real healthy. But we had a great time, honestly. There were a lot of good incidents that summer at that house.
That comes out really well in the book. How good a time you really did have, even when you weren't having a good time. You were able to take the high road on that. So I want you to go through just, quickly, what teams you've ridden for and explain how that works. So I think your first gig, you were paid some ridiculous fee for the whole year of like $2,000 or something. Is that what I remember?
So when my first year I started racing, this was my freshman year of college. I started racing that spring. And I was put on, my friend David Guttenplan had this amateur team out of Atlanta, and he got them to pick me up when I got my Cat 2 in like 4 months or something. So they put me on that team as a Cat 2, which just, they gave me two kits and a skin suit and I was on my way happily. But that was the AG Edwards team. And then the next year, by a really ridiculous coincidence, a good friend of mine to this day, Dan Larson, who was the coach at Florida back then, he was hired to direct a new pro team, a development team that was kind of modeled after what Slipstream was back then, which was like a pretty low budget, just, a bunch of U23 development guys. But it was sponsored by Mark Holowesko, who's still on the Garmin jersey today. Back then he sponsored this team and sort of wanted to have something comparable to their program. And the guy he hired to run it was the one guy on the planet who knew that I maybe was any good. And that was Dan Larson, the coach at the University of Florida. So they put me on there. The next year I was paid $8,000, which was, I think that might be the most that any Cat 2 has ever been paid. That was incredibly lucky. And then my luck ran out for a very large number of years where,
beginner's luck,
where
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I just kind of stumbled into it. I was like, oh, that sounds good. All right, I'll do that. This bike racing thing is easy. But then that team was called VMG. That team only lasted 1 year, and then Alawesco went and sponsored the national team instead. The national team the following year had basically the same kid as mine, but they didn't keep me on the roster. It was a whole different management, and Dan Larson was gone, and no one knew who I was. And all I'd done that year was crash in some big races, so they didn't really want me. And so that was when I went to Saconnet and joined David Dutton Plan again. The year after that, I had a problem where every team I was on would fold within like a year or two.
Maybe you were the problem.
Maybe. I feel like it was a bad coincidence, or just maybe just every team folds in 2 years these days.
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I might be gloom and doom for these pro teams, cause, and then Bissell did it. Jelly Belly's safe, so that's I got something.
Yeah.
That I didn't kill that team.
No, no, it was around for a while.
Yeah, and they're not going anywhere, hopefully. So from there, I rode from Saconnet. I went to this team called Sierra Fruta, which is based in Massachusetts. I lived there the following summer. I lived in Amherst, hanging out with Jeremy Powers. And then the year after that, so that fall, Sierra Fruta, basically on Sierra Fruta, they didn't really care what I did. They gave me two bikes and a couple kits. And they paid me $2,000 for the year and said, do whatever you want with this, because they knew I was just going to drive to every race that I could. So pretty much I did that. I took distance courses at UF and drove to Redlands and Gila and all that stuff from Florida and Georgia. I just went back and forth across the country a bunch of times. And at the end of that year, I went back to school, did like my last two classes, so I graduated that fall. And signed the contract with Jelly Belly for 2009.
And here we are 5 years later, and you are a pro. I mean, yes. you are the real deal. The real deal.
Yeah, it seems like it.
No. Well, I guess when you look in the mirror, you're the one who's going to have to decide that.
Well, the thing is, when I first signed the contract with Jelly Belly, I was like, yes, I made it. You know, I did it. And even though it was no money, essentially. You know, and then a couple days later, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't feel like I made it, you know? I'm like, maybe it's going to feel like, what's it going to take to feel like I made it? And then I signed to Kenda, and I got kind of paid for the first time. And then Bissell, I got, like, a living wage for the first time. And every time it's like, oh, it's not quite there yet. I got to do something else. And it's so with Garmin, too, it's, okay, I'm on the team. You know, now it's like, all right, now I got to win something. Maybe that'll satisfy me. I'm not sure where at some point I'll be like, all right, I'm satisfied. I did it.
No, you won't.
But just being on the team, you don't think?
You know, if you are ever satisfied, you're going to kick yourself. Come on. There's always going to be something else.
Well, if I win the tour, I'm satisfied.
Oh,
right?
Okay. All right. We'll leave that as out.
But I can't. So that's the problem. That's the problem. If I win the tour, I'll be satisfied. Maybe there's some big race that I could win that I'd be like, all right, you did enough. And not to say I'll quit after that, but just enough that I won't beat myself up anymore.
Okay. Once again, I'm speaking with Phil Guymon. He just wrote a new book, Pro Cycling on $10 a Day, From Fat Kid to Euro Pro. It's published by Velo Press. So, you know, I'm going to ask this question about the scandal that's called doping in our sport. And you have a very clear picture of what your life is like, and it has nothing to do with doping. Tell me what you think is going on in pro cycling today. I mean, you are in the thick of it. You ride for a hot team right now. Tell me what you see, what you believe, and what you think is happening going forward.
Right. No, it's funny. I think it's hard for you guys to tell, and it's hard for fans to tell. And you've also been told a bunch of times it's clean now, you know, and everyone's sort of just tired of that message, which is understandable. And I kind of had this thing. I didn't know if it was clean, if everybody's doping, everybody's clean. I didn't really know until I was kind of in the races, and sort of able to feel it, because you can feel it. There's been a few times where I've raced against guys who I suspected were dirty, and eventually out of like the handful, like five people that I've been, I don't know about this. Like, I'm sitting on the wheel and I'm like, I don't buy it. I don't think you're clean. Like, I think three of those have eventually tested positive. So I like, and it's just, you can, like I said, you can feel it.
And now I'm in the races, and it doesn't, like, there's, I'm not the best one, but, by any means, but it's also like you see something and it's not ridiculous. It's not such a level better than me that, that I feel like it can't just be explained by years or talent or some, you know, it's all marginal. I know on my team, it's a stupid thing to say, but I know on my team, everybody's completely clean, and it's really refreshing, you know, when it's kind of discussed at the table or some teams give their guys Tramadol, with 10K to go, guys take that. I don't even know what's in there, but it's nice on our team. They're like, no, we don't do that. So even, you know, not that I want it, but even if you want it, you can't have that little weird gray area stuff. So I think like there are some things that are, you know, in the sport today, there are still guys that are taking that, but it's legal, you know, and it's not something that gives you 5 or 10%. And that's the biggest difference. Whereas like before it was nuclear bombs. It was an arms race. You know, if one guy had it, the other guy was in a different, he wasn't even really competing. And now it's kind of like a knife fight, you know, so maybe there's some shadier things going on, and, you know, maybe you attack in the snow on a descent kind of thing, but for the most part, we've all got the same weapons. And it's all darn close. So maybe, you know, if somebody's doing something that's, you know, an inhaler, for instance, something stupid like that, that's not making them drop anybody. Like there's nothing that works that well that's causing any effect that's still around right now. At least it doesn't feel like it to me. And maybe somebody will find something soon and that'll change, but hopefully everyone's on the up and up. And I think the riders kind of feel like everyone's kind of relieved for those days to be over, that they're not risking their health anymore.
Well, that's refreshing unto itself, that, you know, we're going to have healthy people at the end of their careers instead of people who are going to be burned out and sick in some ways.
Right. I think enough guys, you know, you see enough heart attacks and issues for guys that were kind of in that world. You see, just they saw a handful of it, and the guys who were still in it were like, man, I'm glad we don't have to do this anymore.
So I want to also ask you about what you're doing right now. So you're in Burbank. You are not in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
What has your season been like? What have you been doing this season?
Well, it started early. I did my first race was in Argentina at the end of January, and then I did a pretty long trip to Europe. It was a solid 3 months, based in Girona, and then I would go. I did Mallorca. I did 3 days of West Flanders. I did the Tour of Catalonia. There was something in between those. I did a couple training camps. I did the Cirque de la Sarthe. I ended up with almost as many race days, like by May, that I've had in a whole year, in the past, where, you know, you just, there aren't that many races in the U.S. and you had a lot more time in between them. So I did all that, and I think I definitely learned a lot. The team, pretty much all the riders that were around me, the more experienced guys, the directors were all like, by Catalonia, they're all like, man, you know what, you really got the hang of this. It's a whole different thing, just the size of the fields and the roads and the caravans, all that stuff. It's just, I think I exceeded everyone's expectations and kind of met my own. I was hoping to get a result somewhere in there in Europe, but otherwise it was a good spring.
How old are you
back,
now?
I'm 28.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm not young.
But you're not old. I mean, you're kind of in a good place, I think.
Kind of. I mean, you know, like I look at teammates. I had a very similar schedule to Nate Brown this year on Garmin, and we got to know each other pretty well. You know, he's 20, I think, racing age 23 or 22, and he's on Garmin with a 2-year contract. And I'm like, man, like that must be nice.
When you look back at where you were when you were 23, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you know, like I was scraping by, like, you know, racing criteriums. The amount of things that I did I was going towards this goal of eventually racing in Europe, but that wasn't my ultimate goal. My ultimate, well, my that was my ultimate goal. My short-term goal was just to get by another 6 months. And in that process of getting by another 6 months, I did so many things that really didn't prepare me at all to race in Europe. Just all the criteriums and all the, like looking back, just a lot of wasted time and energy that it was wasted in the long run. And at the time it seemed really important. It's cool to see, someone like Nate who doesn't have to go through that. Who's just like, you know, this is your track. This is what you're doing. I had cool experiences on the way. Like I said, I wouldn't necessarily change it up. Looking back,
did you ever think you'd get to where you are today? Really?
I know. Not at first. At first, I never. I'm always a one step at a time person. Where when I started, I was like, I really want my Cat 4. You know, and I'm going to work really hard and get my Cat 4. And then moved all the way up, and then it was, okay, now I'm a pro. Now I need to be a pro who gets a paycheck. And it was just, I just kind of leapfrogged. And maybe it would have behooved me to say, you know, to look at it when I was 18 and say, I want to race in Europe, and what do I need to do for that? In which case, I would have done longer rides. I would have gone to USA Cycling Talent ID camps and tried to get on the national team and, figured out something with college. Probably wouldn't work out with college. So, it was one at a time, and then there was a point where when I was riding for Tenda and I started winning races, that I realized, like, oh, maybe I could be once in a while the best guy in the U.S. gets a phone call to go to Europe, and I was like, all right, I'm that guy. Maybe I can be that other guy. Maybe I can get that call and have this opportunity. And at that point, then I started training for Europe. I started training to be good at the Tour of California and the races where they might see me and decide they want my services.
Well, I have to say, we actually have been having a conversation for almost a half hour.
And no
yeah, way.
Yeah, what do you know? All right.
I know. Time just flies when you're having this much fun. So I'm going to say it again that I really enjoyed your book. And one of the reasons I enjoyed it is because it's real.
Right.
You know, you wrote it, which is another interesting point. A lot of the books that are out right now, and there are a lot of books out right now, I promise you.
Right.
Are written with either a ghostwriter or another writer, but you wrote this one yourself, and it proves that you actually are pretty literate to begin with. And I like that.
Yeah, I got that going for me. Thanks.
You do. So the name of the book, again, is Pro Cycling on $10 a Day, From Fat Kid to Euro Pro, written by Phil Guymon. He is with Garmin Sharp. And it has just been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Diane. You too.
All right. You have a great night and a great rest of your season.
All right. You too.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye. Was kind of nice.
Yeah, it was great. And I love anybody that has cookie rankings on their website.
Cookie rankings. Oh, yes, that's right.
He ranks cookies. Yeah. How can you go wrong?
No, that is correct. He does do that. And the book really is fun. It is a lot of fun. In some ways, it's got some very smug comments and some snide comments. But you know what? He did pay his dues and he's earned his right and he's a pro now. And he's just a really kind of cool guy. I like him. Well, believe it or not, guess what? We're done.
Already?
We are. It is the end of our show. And it has been a fun one. Thank you so much for listening to The Outspoken Cyclist this week. Watch Ram if you have some time and root your favorite team. They're racing across America as we speak. And we will be back same time next week on The Outspoken Cyclist. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.